Welcome to the show, Entrepreneurs in Conversation with moi, Géraldine Juppé. I joyfully sit down every week with entrepreneurs, innovators, and creators to pick their brilliant, fascinating minds. My mission is to help them share their stories of struggle and success. The rich details from openly conversing serves as sound advice for us to hear and hopefully learn from. Enjoy the listen. Coming up on Entrepreneurs in Conversation with Géraldine. Problems that you are solving, and not the problem actually you're solving, but why you decided to, you know, tackle this issue in the manufacturing industry.
Yeah, so you know, like the why started at a point while I was working in manufacturing. You know, me and Gibran, we were launching solutions.
All right, so welcome to another episode of Entrepreneurs in Conversation with Géraldine. And today I have the pleasure to have my dear friend that I met at Next AI Montreal, Akshay, who is the founder of Eduro. And I would love for you to introduce yourself and also to introduce Gibran, who is not there today because busy with clients. And I'd love you to introduce yourself and your team.
Thanks, Géraldine. Hello, everyone. My name is Akshay. As Géraldine mentioned, I'm a co-founder of Eduro, and my co-founder is Gibran. We both started Eduro in 2019, but the idea of Eduro actually started back when we both started working in a same factory in manufacturing. So mm-hmm. by background, we both are mechanical engineers, graduated from University of Toronto. Gibran is mm-hmm. 2 years seniors than me. And then, you know, at work we met, we both were in same department. And that's where we saw that, you know, how manufacturing is growing, like advancing slower than the general industry, and how the solutions that come into the manufacturing, they have a big impact in their efficiencies. And mm-hmm. that's where we said that, you know, we can join our forces. He brings his strengths, I bring my strengths to build great products for manufacturing. So yeah, here we are. Let's talk more during this podcast.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. And the first and foremost question that I'd like to ask you is, I mean, can you tell us more about the problems that you are solving, and not the problem actually you're solving, but why you decided to, you know, tackle this issue in the manufacturing industry?
Yeah. So, you know, like the why started at a point while I was working in manufacturing. You know, me and Gibran, we were launching solutions, and the impact they had. And talking about impact is that, you know, we spent building a solution which took us like 4 months, but company had a saving of almost $750,000. We spent 6 months building another solution, company saved over $2 million. Mm-hmm. And that's where we saw that, you know, that company was pretty advanced and they had such a huge improvement. And that's where we said that, you know, if one company can improve by such a significant margin, there are many other companies who can leverage these solutions mm-hmm. to get better. But my mm-hmm. why actually started from the fact is that, like, my life vision, like life goal, is to help other humans be more capable. Mm-hmm. And what I see is that, you know, manufacturing has a big impact in our everyday life, mm-hmm. from everything we wear to everything we eat, mm-hmm. gets touched by manufacturing sector. And when you look at all these inefficiencies, they eventually increase the cost of everything that we buy on a daily basis. So if we can improve manufacturing, we can reduce the cost of everything mm-hmm. that we own, and we could have a little bit of more money left that we can use to improve our quality of life. Mm-hmm. And this thing started when I was diagnosed with a severe allergy, and mm-hmm. When I had to go to the pharmacist, the EpiPens, two EpiPens were like, after insurance, around $500. Super expensive. And around that same time, the CEO of EpiPen was under investigation that why the hell are they increasing their costs significantly? And this lady says that, you know, during one of her points, she said, yeah, manufacturing these things is very complicated. You know, there is a lot of money that goes in there. And then I did some research through my sources and I found out that, you know, that company only has some biometric solutions to track the operator working on machine, but rest everything is running on paper back then. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that, you know, there can be big impact in people's life if we only improve manufacturing sector. And in order to do that, Gibran and I, we said, you know, companies wants to improve, but they don't have means to improve in a way that they don't know how to bring new technologies. Like they have all the data, but they don't know how to put it together in a solution. So we said, we'll sell them solutions infrastructure where they can plug in their data, deploy the solution and get fast ROI, start improving their manufacturing in a short time.
I love that. I really love like that you were very, I mean, human focused in the end, not only on the machine, but, and the idea of growing a business, was it a concern? So actually, what was your concern when you decided in 2019 to grow your business?
So I would say it was the fact when I was doing my master's in 2018, I saw again that, you know, the research that I did created some predictive maintenance models and, you know, did a case study. We saw that, you know, we were saving the company so much. That's where I said that, you know, like I have done so many projects. These are some advanced projects that I can see coming in pipeline. And they have a huge impact. And at the same time, you see factories, you know, their workforce is not skilled enough to understand what's happening in the market. And that was the turning point. I said, you know, like we can help manufacturing get better and eventually have a bigger impact on our daily lives. So that was the point where when I pitched this vision that, you know, how you can improve humans' life to Gibran. And that's where he said, you know what, there is a good reason to start Eduro.
I really love that. And so when we met Annexed AI, so we were working with the idea of integrating AI as a part of our mutual solutions. So the AI component in Eduro is not an easy thing. But I wanted to know what is the AI reality look like for a startup? Because if I do remember back then when I was working on another startup, that was not an easy thing to tackle the right people, the right data. That was quite challenging. So where do you stand towards what's the AI reality?
So I can speak about my industry. The reality is that companies want to use AI, but they don't have data to use AI. And that's one of the missing piece of the puzzle is that they have to digitize their processes so that they can actually train an AI model. And this was a big lesson learned in our journey was that we worked with our customers. They saw the impact that we can bring using an AI solution, which was a production planning. And then when we went into a stage where we said that, okay, in order to capture the data, to give you the results, you know, this is the set of data that I need. And customer looked at us, they're like, in order to give you that data, I'll have to invest $250,000 to upgrade my machines and get you the data. And it's going to take them more than 6 months to get the data. So that was the part where we realized that, you know, big chunk of industry is not even ready to adopt our manufacturing AI solutions. And that's where we took a step back is that, you know, we'll help you. We have this solution ready for people who are ready, but majority of people who are not ready will give you another set of solution where you can start generating data.
Yeah, that's totally, I mean, this is very challenging, even though we all know that AI is very trendy, is not as simple as it sounds actually to integrate all these AI component in whatever technology people are building nowadays. Now tell me more about one thing. I mean, you are originally from India. I'm from Cameroon, and the connection with that is we are both from, you know, immigrant descent. So was it like organic and natural for you to tell your family that you decided actually to start a business?
No, it was not natural at all. When like I made this decision to jump into entrepreneurship when I was finishing my master's. Mm-hmm. And basically, like, I was working and then I was doing my master's. I had return offer from the company. And when I decided that, you know, I don't want to go back. There was like my family just said, you know, think 10 times before you take this decision, because many people would love to take a place that you're leaving. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing that I saw pushback. But at the same time, you know, like what my dad says is that it doesn't matter what you do, make sure you do something better than I did in my entire life. Mm-hmm. Right. So my dad's a manager of engineering in manufacturing. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's where I kind of told him that, okay, like, you know, if I go down that path, I could be same as you, but nothing better than you. And you have always tell me that, you know, to go one step beyond. And this is a good opportunity, and I see, you know, something that I can see myself working passionately on something on a long term, and mm-hmm. have a bigger impact, and you know, like it will be a one step ahead as we dream, and it's mm-hmm. not something that just my dad said. Even his my grandfather told him, my great grandfather mm-hmm. told my grandfather. So you'll see, like, my great grandfather was a farmer. My grandfather was an engineer in Indian Air Force. Then my mm-hmm. dad became engineer in Nestle, mm-hmm. and now he's a manager. And now I'm another engineer, but now I'm taking a very different path.
I love that. So, I mean, what were the key essential points that has helped you so far move forward with your business? Because mentally, you know, find the strength to move on, you know, going against our parents' will is not always easy, but also in terms of productivity, right? Because like growing a startup, it comes with so many challenges in so many ways, growing your customer line, your sales, your everything, you know, your technology even. So what were the key essential points that kept you focused so far and helped you grow the business? Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great thing that you mentioned about so many metrics, like growing customer, growing revenue, building your product. And, you know, the way I see it is basically you have to, in order for you to grow sustainably, these metrics will be there. But what you have to look after is, how are you reducing your risk in the company, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that risk could be in terms of sales. That risk mm-hmm. could be in terms of finding customer. That risk mm-hmm. could be in terms of technology. So mm-hmm. what I do is that on a day-to-day basis, I make sure that every new step we make has to help us reduce the risk in the company. So mm-hmm. for an example, like at such an early stage, you know, when you have very few customers, your technology is very new, you have to focus on the product that you make is something that addresses the customer's problem and mm-hmm. customer pays you for it. Mm-hmm. Because that's your validation. Once mm-hmm. you have a validation that, you know, like, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have 100 ideas that you want to work on at the same time. But, you know, guess what? You only have 24 hours in a day. Mm-hmm. Right? So either you can have a huge team and good luck managing that. But at such an early stage when there are only me and Gibran, and now that our team is growing, you have to focus on the earliest validation. Once mm-hmm. you have the validation of what type of a product that a customer is going to pay you, then you take a step number two is that, okay, you know what? I'm able to sell this product. What is the standardization that I need to do? Mm-hmm. Right. So that now I can grow my product in terms of technology. Now I have standardization. Then you say, how can I sell it to more people? Then it becomes stage number three, which is scaling. So now mm-hmm. you see that, you know, we covered all the three bases was basically validation, standardization, scaling. And then, you know, stage number four is that how do you retain that cycle? And then last stage is profitability. Mm-hmm. So that's how I see is that, you know, how you're reducing the risk. So at this stage, we're reducing the risk in terms of the product market fit, more like I would say product and the customer's problem fit, where we're getting paid for it.
I really love that. That's excellent. So, but how do you plan to expand? Because there's multiple ways. We all know there's like so many ways that you can expand as well your business. Either you're going to look for more fund mm-hmm. or basically grow your list of clients, of course, yeah. doing sales, or you find other partners. So which path actually would you pick in these? Maybe a combination of all or maybe one of these?
Yeah. So you know, as we are at this validation stage, you know, I say we got some funding from NextAI, and then we did some funding from our friends and family, both under 50K. And mm-hmm. that helps us do a validation that, you know, we have something, people will buy. And once you do the validation, we have certain targets. Once you meet that, mm-hmm. that's when you can go out and tell your investors that, look, this is what our metric was. These are the risks that we have eliminated. And mm-hmm. these are the next steps that we want to do, which is why we need X amount. So that's the strategy that we are going to take. Mm-hmm. It's basically finish, like hit our milestones. Yep. And then that, what are the risks that we're eliminating? And then what are the risks that we want to eliminate after we raise money? Mm-hmm. That's how I see it, is that, you know, how we are going to grow is that raise some venture capital down the road. But, mm-hmm. you know, before you raise anything, eliminate the risks that you have listed down and yeah. show the validation.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. But let's dig deeper. So you were saying you raised funds from your loved ones, your family. Yeah. How does this work for someone, for you? And then mm-hmm. you would advise somebody that would be looking for raising some money, some fund from their family. How does it work? What's the process? Or what is it like, I mean, you just ask, or there's like, you know, some strict procedure that you have to follow in order to do that?
Yeah. The step number one in that procedure is you have to tell your friends and family is that there is an investment opportunity. It's mm-hmm. a very high risk opportunity. Mm-hmm. So high risk that they could lose all the money they are going to invest. Mm-hmm. That's step number one, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to spend time explaining all everything, and then you tell them that, you know, you can lose all of your money. I usually tell people that, you know, this is what it is. If you're okay with it, then we can talk about what we're building and how it's going to grow. Mm-hmm. That was a step number one. And that's where I saw like a couple of my friends who were very interested, optimistic that they wanted to invest. You know, they backed out. And you know, you have to be totally okay with it. People mm-hmm. will say no. You have to be okay with it because, mm-hmm. you know, it's someone's hard-earned money. Yeah. And at the same time, you have to respect that somebody's working hard to raise that money. Mm-hmm. To either grow it on their own, but they're trusting you with that money. So yes. even though if it is a small amount, you have to respect that small amount of money. And that was my step number one. And mm-hmm. and this is where I told them that, you know, I kind of told them that, you know, don't expect Eduro to make profit for next 5 to 6 years. Mm-hmm. Startup, we're going to grow. So there is not going to be profit for at least 6 to 7 years. Like 7 years is pushing it, but nothing for 6 years. But I explain them, you know, how mm-hmm. it's going to grow, how it's going to be, you know, like we're going to expand teams, how we're going to get customers. So, and then at the same time, tell them that, you know, this is just a first draft of the plan, because you never know what's going to go wrong. And, you know, mm-hmm. they all got a reality check because I got the funding from them and then we got hit by Corona. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where I had to tell them that, you know, yes, we were going to do certain things, but, you know, now we can't. Mm-hmm. And more than anything, you know, people just who are giving you money, they just want honesty and transparency.
Yes.
Right. Like, even if you tell them that, you know, I used your money in certain way, in order to, you know, let's say grow sales, but the sales didn't grow. right? Mm-hmm. And you lost all the money, they will be totally okay with it, right? Yeah. But if you don't tell them what did you do with their money, you know, then you'll spend your time and energy, you know, protecting yourself or like arguing with them. So yeah. Just be honest and transparent, right? And because, again, this is someone's hard-earned money. I don't want to play around. Like, I know as a CEO of this company, my job is to grow the company so that their investment can grow as well.
I really love all that strategy, because sometimes we think, because I discuss with other entrepreneurs that because you ask money to your parents, husband or girlfriend, I don't know, that you shouldn't be accountable for asking, you know, that investment. But it's the same as asking a bank or a VC. You have to be accountable for what you ask for and show the results and what you're doing with that money. And I really like your strategy and how you put it, actually. So what is your global strategy? Because you said you use key terms that was music to my ears. You said you're growing right now, and then your team is growing as well. What is your global strategy in order to expand and to go to the next step?
Yeah, so in terms of growing, I would say is that what happened during Corona was that we changed a little bit of our direction, as in that, you know, we said we'll, instead of giving that marketplace or that entire AI solution that we had for customer, we said, you know, we'll take even step back to make it simple for them to use solution, and we'll validate that, you know, who's going to pay for these solutions. And that's where we saw, you know, people were interested to a point where we got invited to the factories. Within the first 2 weeks, we went online, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we saw that there was a pull, and mm-hmm. there was not like a push. So, mm-hmm. so, you know, pull is basically like you're running after to fulfill the demand, and push is like, you know, you're just like telling customer, please take this thing, right? So we saw the pull, and that's where we got the validation that, you know, people need our solutions, and that's where we, in order to have some extra pair of hands, we grew our team. Because mm-hmm. me and Gibran were at a point that, you know, we are building the solution, we are doing the marketing, we are doing the sales call, and now we have a better pull in terms of sale. And at the same time, you know, we need some expertise in enterprise sales. We mm-hmm. got an extra person to help us out in a short term for the sales. Then mm-hmm. we saw that, okay, you know, I was getting overwhelmed and Gibran was getting overwhelmed in terms of the programming that we had to do.
Yes.
So we onboarded a full stack programmer to take some weight off our hands, because now we know that, you know, we are at a point that there are 24 hours, you need to sleep, you need to do work. And you know, if you don't do everything, your customer is going to get delayed. So that's where we brought this another person to help us out with the development. So mm-hmm. from a team of two to now we are a team of four. Mm-hmm. And as we hit our revenue targets, the goal is to fundraise and then grow this team even further.
Amazing. I really like your strategy and your approach. I would have for an advice, though, because I had, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs coming to me and asking, but how do you hire based on what you look at when you're mm-hmm. searching from some resources to give you a hand on your business?
Well, the main thing that I go after is that at this point, you need speed. And in order to get the speed, you need experts. So mm-hmm. the salesperson, sales and business development person that we onboarded, he has 10 years of enterprise sales experience, right? Like you can say I have 1.5, Gibran has 3.5. But he has 10 years of experience. And, you know, this person was able to come with us in the sales calls, in the meetings. And you know, he said, okay, this meeting was pointless. Like the person just wanted a price and he's not even serious. So he was able to see all those red flags and mm-hmm. help us put the process together. So same goes for our full stack developer. Mm-hmm. But bottom line is that you need experts at this point. And at yeah. the same time, you need people who you can work with and who are easy to work with.
Yes.
And make sure there are frequencies are same to put it in a technical way and move forward fast. But take your time finding the right person.
Yeah. It's not easy. It's really not easy, actually, to recruit, especially in this, you know, challenging time. It's really not an easy thing to do. Well, that's also another question that I had. Like, we are in, you know, in the pandemic. How do you navigate as a startup, you know, this pandemic? Because, like, there's so many things at stake right now and that are very key and sensitive. Mm-hmm. How does it work for you guys?
Well, the main thing that we always focused was loving the customer's problem. More than loving your customer, we loved their problems. And we saw that, okay, if you have a certain problem, how can we make sure that, you know, our product can help you out? And, you know, there is, I'm not going to deny it, there are sometimes customer has a problem and our product is not a right fit. So, but stay close to your customer, love their problems and make changes to your products. Get a feedback, because at this early stage, you can afford to make those quick changes to adopt faster. Because as you go at a later stage, you know, these things are going to standardize and then there will be pressure on you to sell something which is not as sticky. Sticky as in a customer is going to buy. So that is the only thing that kind of helped us during pandemic, is that we listened to a customer, we understood their problems, because now they had completely new, different problems that they had before. Right? Like one of our customer, he just wants to get rid of paper. Totally. One of the things they say is to save costs, save efficiency. Now they also say that, you know, they want to eliminate paper because it could carry corona in the factory.
Yes.
So they just want to get rid of those paper, right? So that's where you have to understand, like, why is your customer doing certain things, and how you can help them. So love your customer problems and make sure you adopt and move forward.
I wanted to know as well. So, you know, it's not easy to work on the technological part. Like you said, it's very expensive. It takes time. It takes a lot of resources as well. But what's your plan and what's your strategy in order to attain, you know, to reach the focal point in terms of technology that you need for Eduro?
So the plan is basically, you know, we start small. And when you start small, you solve customers' problem. And that's where you have, right now in my mind, you know, we can grow in 100 ways. But as we work with customers, you can start to see the common denominators. And as you see there are common denominators, you start to improve your product. Because you have to realize that, you know, there is a way to help customer in a short term, but keep in mind, how can you help them in a long term as well? So for us, short term is help them digitize, long term, bring AI for their processes. So that's the strategy that we are taking. Like, we know we already have a AI product that is sitting on the shelf, but we're like, you know what? We can't deploy it right now. Help a customer in short term, and then we'll bring this technology as well. So keep the vision, understand your customer, grow, adopt, and you know, don't give up easily.
Yeah, I really love that. I really love that. And going with that technology strategy, how did you protect, or what's the plan in terms of protecting, you know, your know-how and, you know, your technology?
The simple way to protect was that we had NDAs with a customer. So that's like, that's one way to protect our product. And again, we are not a B2C company. We are more on a B2B side. So that's where, like, whatever you build stays behind the scene. But at the same time, we don't give a source code to a customer. We give them access to the APIs where they can send data and then they'll get the result. What happens in the black box is something they don't get access to. Right? That's our way to protect the IP. But what we have planned is that as we are going to grow down the road, we are going to apply for more patents.
Nice. And is there a specific, or what is the specific, you know, path that you need to take and a procedure in order to, you know, register your patent?
Well, the main thing is, even before I jump into patents, you know, we need to build something, not build something, like we need to word it in a way that, you know, it's new. Because if you go look for things that we have patented, we are planning to patent, you have to spend a significant amount of time to see if there is something that is very similar to you. So that's step number one that we need to keep in mind. But the main strategy about patents is, it's hard to get a software patent. So that's where we are working with a couple of hardware partners to bring a patented hardware with an embedded algorithm. And that's a simple way. And apart from that, like, how do I say? It's when we work with the customers, you know, there is a shared IP sometimes. And when you're such a small company, sometimes that IP is protected between you and this client. But your client has a bigger legal resources to help protect that IP as well. So that's a cheap way for a startup. But, you know, like when you develop an IP with one customer, they have much more power to protect your protect IP, because they have vested interest in it as well. So yeah, but we try to manage it. You know, you don't want to protect all of your IPs using your customer, because then they can dictate that, you know, where we can deploy that IP or not.
I love that. So what are your next steps for Eduro? Because you're growing, you are navigating, you know, this very difficult time, you know, smoothly, if we can say. What's the next steps for you guys?
Well, our biggest next steps are basically to hit the revenue targets that we have.
Yeah.
Get the certain number of customers that we wanna have on board. And once we have that, our goal is to grow by raising funds and then increase our team size to mature and standardize our product in a scalable way, so that, you know, you can win the customer easily and then help and then retain that customer in a long run.
Perfect. I love that. I have two last questions for you. The first before the last one will be, what would you tell actually your 20-year-old self? Because the question that I have would be, did you figure you will be an entrepreneur today? So what would you say to your 20-year-old self?
So I would tell a 20-year-old self is, don't wait on other people's approval. Right? You don't need other people to approve your decision. And you know, be bold much faster. Like, sometimes you have to take a risk, then accept it, right? And accept the reality and stay persistent. But the main thing is that don't wait on other people's approval, because the people who are gonna hold you back are gonna hold you back from their experience and their pessimism. And you know, you that might not be right fit. I'm not saying those people are wrong. They might not be right fit for the dreams that you have. And basically that's where you need to line up what your expectations are. And in order to get to meet those dreams and expectations, get advice from right people. So, and don't wait on everyone's approval, because not everyone is an entrepreneur out there.
I love that. And would you have, like, I don't know, a podcast, like a book that accompanied you so far that helped you actually, you know, grow?
Yeah. One of the book which is the book that had a big impact on me was a book by Amy Cuddy called Presence. It's all about human psychology and how people think that, how others are going to think, and then slow down their decisions. They don't take risk on their life. I always wish, instead of reading that book at 25, I wished I had read that when I was 20. So you know, if you are in dilemma or like you want to read something to motivate yourself, just drop everything and go read the book Presence. It will help you. And then there are other many books that you can read on your free time, like 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel. That was a good startup book. Lean Startup, it's like a Bible of startups. But you know, these are all tools to help you out in your journey. But step number one in that journey is from your own side. Like, you know, you have to be the owner of that decision. And in order to be the owner of that decision, you have to be mentally strong. For that reason, I believe the book Presence is the way to go.
I love that. Thank you for your time.
That was the last, like, you know, what I would tell people is that in a general way is that you have to be okay with the things not going the way you expected them to, because it all comes down to setting an expectation. You know, if you have an expectation that, you know, you'll jump into entrepreneurship life and within 3 years you'll be a billionaire, that's a wrong expectation. And if you start this journey with this expectation, you know, you're going to run into a wall. You can jump into like problems, and you know, like it can lead to depression, right? When things don't go away the way you want it to in 3 years, that's when you're going to look back is that, hey, if I wasn't in startup life and I was in my job in 3 years, you know, I would have made this much money. Everything could have been so better, right? So have a right expectation. That's something that I tell people. And second thing that I tell entrepreneurs is make sure your team members are patient.
Yeah.
Because when things go wrong, you know, if you have a team member who is nervous, saying that, you know, I want the result right now, I want us a clear path right now, that's a recipe for failure. And you need a patient people who can take a step back, see what went wrong, analyze how could you have done things better, and then come up with the right strategy. It's okay to wait for a couple of days to come up with the right thing instead of, you know, fighting it out to come up with something in an hour. Because that will create a toxic culture, and make sure, you know, you are patient and then your team members are also patient, because everything is good when things are going perfect, but your team will be tested when things go wrong. And when things go wrong, the people who are not patient, they are going to create the toxic work environment.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all I have to say for now.
Thank you for sharing these words of wisdom, because I think they are very essential. If you are starting a business, growing a business, I think it's very key to be patient. Like you said, to have a team that is patient, but be also patient with yourself. I think this is as much important, because sometimes we want to grow too fast, and growing too fast is not always like the best idea or solution.
Yep.
Thank you.
You can grow fast and you can have troubles as well, or you go in a right way. The key is doing the right thing.
Yeah. I agree. Well, thank you for being there with me today, Akshay.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Geraldine.
Bye. Here is a preview of the next episode.
So I know what they're paid to do. I didn't know exactly what they could do. And that's kind of where the journey started for me into this space. And that kind of molded into when I was transitioning from South Africa, where I'm originally from, into Canada. I found that I was getting a bit of what do you call it? Discrimination is probably the best word I can use.
This is the end of the show. Share the show with your community. Make sure to listen to the next episode on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and Anchor, and more. Follow us on Instagram at ecg.podcast, and me, Geraldine JP. Follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. See you next time.